Hey, everybody, this is Shop Talk, episode number 8, with Keith Johnson. On Instagram, he's known as KJ Sawdust. On YouTube, it's Keith Johnson Custom Woodworking. This, I'm going to tell you right now, is a phenomenal podcast. Keith has shared so much of his background in woodworking and where he got from when he was a child to where he is now. And boy, what a great story. So kick back, relax, and get ready, and make sure you listen to the very end because there are so many gems in this one. Thanks for watching, everybody. Our guest today is Keith Johnson for episode number 8. Can you imagine?
Wow. Already up to 8. The snowman. Number 8.
And Keith is from, and let me get this all correct, Keith. You are on Instagram at KJ Sawdust.
Correct.
YouTube at Keith Johnson Custom Woodworking.
Got it.
And you're part of the Shop Sounds podcast.
That's right. Wow, anything you've done else? Your homework. I'm on TikTok too, KJ Sawdust, or you can follow me on Facebook under Keith Johnson Custom Woodworking. Kind of got my tentacles everywhere.
Yes.
It's hard to keep up.
Absolutely. Okay. So I'm going to add one more thing to that.
Sure.
Keith's my friend, everybody.
I
met him down in Austin about, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Oh, gosh. I can't believe it's been that long. Yeah.
And some of those guys and gals I met down there, just hanging out, I knew that you'd be my friends for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had Alma on here. We've had Doc. We've had Jason Bent. I met you all down there, and we just had so much daggone fun. So I'm going to tell you right now, we're thinking about doing a little bit of something like that at Festool here in the future.
Oh, but
I don't know how soon, but we'd really like to get a bunch of people together. I think it'd be wicked cool.
Absolutely. Cool.
Okay. So enough about that and enough about Festool. I always like this question when someone would say, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, boy.
How did you get started? How long have you been doing it? And let's just go from there.
Sure. I started actually in 8th grade shop class. I remember I grew up in New Hampshire on a 100-acre farm. You know, we weren't farmers, but we rented this farmhouse. And there was no cable. You had an antenna that you would dial in on your TV. And pretty much the only thing that came in was PBS. And this old house, a New Yankee Workshop, we're from Boston. So that's, 45 minutes to an hour from where I grew up. And so that's what I would always watch. Why I got interested in it, I don't know. My father is not like that. My grandfather was a union metal worker, but, nothing to do with woodworking. And so I would watch that. And one of the outbuildings on the farm we grew up had this giant stacks of lumber. And my friends and I would go in there and borrow some pieces and build tree forts out in the woods. And I remember thinking, I can't wait till I get into 8th grade because that's when I can take shop class. So when I got into shop class, it was, a whole new world. Power tools and also hand tools. We did, for 8th grade, we did some really cool projects like a cribbage board and a tic-tac-toe block. And we did some metal work. We also did some, I think it was aluminum or I hope it wasn't lead, but it might have been lead. Where you pour it into a sand mold and make little cannonballs or little shapes. From there, I really got the bug. So when I went into high school, they had, it wasn't shop class, it was industrial arts, which, none of my friends were really in there. It was more of people, trying to get credit just to kind of get through high school. But, while they were kind of goofing off, I remember my very first project was out of the New Yankee Workshop book. I built his Adirondack chair. I cut out, you have to make your own paper templates.
Oh, yeah.
I remember it was $19 to order. I made it out of pressure treated lumber. So I had it delivered and cut all my templates, did everything. And, from there I built like this, not an entertainment center, but a small kind of cubby cabinet thing. And I made all these little slots for my cassette tapes. So that was, boy, I'm really dating myself.
Oh yeah. Me too, dude.
Yeah.
I had those.
So I started in 10th grade working at a grocery store, and one as bagging groceries, shagging carriages. And one of the guys working with me, who seemed really old at the time, but he was in his early 20s, he said he was a contractor. I was like, what are you doing here for $6 an hour? He's like, oh, I just work here to make extra cash. So we talked all the time about my interest in woodworking. And he said, you should come work for me in the summers and the winters. And, you know, I'll pay you what you get here. And so that's what I did. So, we did, not fun stuff really, but roofing, replacing windows, doors. Mm. And, he let me use his shop kind of in the off hours. And that's where I did kind of my first commission piece for my sister, which was this 3-drawer bureau, this giant kind of dresser. And I did a framed mirror, and it's still in my mother's house to this day. It's made out of pine. And so the same thing, kind of every summer and every winter I would work for him, and then I went to college, and it was, I didn't do anything there. So it kind of was just in the background. But as I got a little further into college, I was kind of buying tools and just delivering them to my mother's house in New Hampshire. That way, when I went home, I had something to use. And so I just, that's how it was. It just started growing a tool inventory. And all of my, now granted, there was some on the job training, but I wasn't really trained in furniture. Everything was this old house. It was New Yankee Workshop. It was books, magazines. There was no YouTube then. So it wasn't really any online videos. So it was all out of that. There's no classical training or schooling. And so pretty much self-taught the whole way through.
What'd you study in school?
Graphic communications. I originally went for architecture, and I realized I'm not going to cut it here because it was such a design-centric program, and I'm not a designer. I was thinking, I'm just going to draw blueprints for the rest of my life, which is not what that program is at all. So I went into engineering, and that was horrendous. So a guy on my hall came home one day with some stickers that he had printed. I was like, where are you doing that? He's like, oh, graphic communications. So I did a little more research into the program, because I went to Clemson in South Carolina. So come to find out, that program has a 99% job placement rate. It's like one or two programs in the country. So I was like, hey, I'll try that out. And I loved it. And so 5 years later, you have to do 2 internships, which is why it took a little longer than 4 years. And yeah, so after college, I took a job with a giant book component printer in Maryland. And was kind of with them off and on for 20 years in different divisions.
Wow. Is that the company you left to go find woodworking?
Right.
Huh. That's really cool. So during those 20 years you were at that company, I would imagine you built up a little bit of arsenal of tools and and maybe honed your skills.
Right. So kind of the timeline there was I was in Maryland for a year, and they moved me to New York City for 5 years. So I wasn't doing anything there.
Wow.
And I had always said in the back of my head, if I get laid off or whatever, I'm going to try this woodworking thing kind of full time. I got laid off in 2004. So moved back home to New Hampshire, and I started working with my uncle. My uncle's a contractor in North Shore, Mass, up in Topsfield, Peabody, Marblehead, Beverly, that area. You know it.
Oh, yeah.
And so he had 2 Finnish carpenters working for him. So I started kind of as a Finnish carpenter. So we were building houses, remodeling, like really cool stuff. And he could tell that I liked doing built-ins and the more detailed stuff, where the other guys were great at the rough stuff, I was better at the finished stuff. So as I was working for him, yes, I started to buy tools and build up my shop in my mother's basement, which is where I was living. So I did that for 5 years. And then my company, or the company I'd worked for, called me back, said, hey, do you want to come to New Jersey and run our children's book pre-press department? And man, it was a tough decision, because my uncle wanted to start a cabinet shop and put me in charge of it. And I remember we were working on the neck out in Ipswich, so out in the water, top of a bluff, and we were shingling a garage. And I was like, in the freezing cold, and I was like, I didn't go to college for this. Yep. So I was like, let me go back to kind of corporate America, where I got a 401k, steady job, benefits, and, pick up my life and move. So it just so happened we did that. We moved to Connecticut and commuted to New Jersey. And I was there for 5 years. They closed that down. And then a company that they had bought doing cosmetic packaging moved into the building. I met the CEO. We hit it off. He said, come stay here and work for us. So that's what I did for 5 years. And then they shut that down. And that's how I left. I didn't quit to take on woodworking. I was laid off and kind of forced into taking this full time. I could have tried to find another job in that my line of work, but I was like, when am I going to get this opportunity again? I mean, I'm 40 years old, so I really need to do this now or just continue on in corporate America. So I had a little severance to play with, and that's when I decided to take kind of my first woodworking class. So at the Connecticut Valley School of Woodworking in Connecticut last fall, I took a 6-week kind of furniture intensive course, which, you know, to try and see what else what I had missed or what I could learn and different techniques. And I did learn a lot. Bob Van Dyke, the teacher and owner of that school, is fantastic. Oh, yeah. I highly recommend it to anybody.
Oh, yeah.
And but I really wanted to be in the content game, like half commissions, half content, and do that content around commissions, which I found a little difficult because, you know, you want to take on projects that are unique, that are going to create great content. Like just doing a bookcase on YouTube, like that, you know, maybe it does appeal to more people. I guess I'm trying to appeal to a different audience, people that are trying to go to the next level from beginner to intermediate to the next level. So it's been difficult to try to find projects like that. But I still need to bring in an income. Like the content game is good when it's good, but when it's not, it's a struggle.
Yeah.
When views are down, you can't get a sponsor for the video. So you got to play, you kind of bob and weave a little bit.
That is so interesting because that's what I take from your channels. Is I look at it and I go, okay, I know it's commissioned work, but you are like that step above where you want to show people into the fine woodworking. Now, when you take on a project, you are the designer?
Generally. And you know what? Unfortunately, it's normally like, hey, we found this on Wayfair or Etsy or Pottery Barn. Can you build
Pinterest.
It? Yeah, yeah. Pinterest I'd rather have because they don't have a price point. When they find something on one of these retail sites, they have a price point in mind already.
Oh, yeah.
And they always think going to be less for whatever reason. So it becomes a little difficult. So even if I take a little bit of a loss, if I know it's going to create good content, I'll take it. Yeah. But listen, ideally, I'd rather be in you know, Jason Bourbonmoth's shoes where you can just build whatever you want and create content around it. But that's not always the case. You know, you got to take, like right now, I have three projects going on. I got this giant mudroom renovation for my sister going on over here. I have a standing desk project, this little bent lamination secret project going on. But I have a small shop. I'm in a garage, 17 by 19. So to do big projects is very – like if someone said, hey, we want a 10-foot dining table, I'd say, let me refer you to somebody else. I just don't have the room. Like my jointer, which is right here, from the blade to the garage door and the blade to that wall is just under 9 feet. So if I need to do anything bigger than that, I have to take it to my buddy's shop or somewhere else to do it.
Yeah.
So I have limitations in the shop. I would prefer, you know, mid-size – furniture rather than anything large.
Yeah. So where are these? So these people contact you via social media somehow?
Generally, it seems like, yeah, most of them come through Instagram or they may have seen something on YouTube. Instagram, which kind of blows me away a little bit too, because people who follow who aren't woodworkers, how they even found my content, no idea.
I'm blown away when I see the amount of views. I'm blown away, but I'm not blown away because I know how good you are at what you do. But I was looking at some of your YouTube videos and seeing how many views. You get like 2 million, 1 million views. You're just like going cranking on YouTube.
Those were the good old days, Sedge. That was a year and a half ago. They've gone down. And, you know, that's where I struggle is trying, like, what is my audience? Like, you really need a clear of who's your audience? Who are you targeting? And I'm still trying to figure that out. Those beginning days where those furniture builds did fantastic. Unfortunately, the viewer and subscriber demographic were not what I wanted. They were more like Indonesia, India. Like they weren't US, Canada, Germany, UK based.
Wow.
So And then as I was able to kind of flip my audience percentage, doing more home improvement, shop tips, shop projects, I was able to shift my audience, but the views are down. So it's like, what, you know, I'm in a spot right now where I'm still trying to figure things out. I was hoping by now it would have been a little more clear, but that's okay. You know, it takes a little bit to get in the audience that you want. And, you know, I'm very fortunate because I have like 40 videos and over 200,000 subscribers, where I know people are like 100, 200 videos and still struggling in the tens of thousands of subscribers. So I'm very fortunate that I have that base. So it's appealing to some companies. So it gets you in the door. But
hey, question for you, because I've seen a lot of classes out about photographing your own work. Do you do all the photographing? Do you shoot all your videos as well?
Yeah, everything is done on the iPhone. Everything. So
Even your pictures, your thumbnails?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God, they're perfectly set up. They're perfectly lighted.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, listen, some of them take a little bit of Photoshop work after, but you know what doesn't? So, I mean, listen, the iPhone with the portrait mode, with that depth of field, and, you know, being in the graphics kind of industry for many years, I've, you know, extensive Photoshop experience. Yeah. So I can do a lot with a horrible photo. You know, people ask all the time, what are you filming on? And it's iPhone. This, you know, you don't need a DSLR. The quality is fantastic with the phone. The biggest thing, like with a YouTube video, is audio. You need to have a good microphone and good audio setup. Mm-hmm. You know, no echo, no static. And it costs you $100 to get a good mic. Like, I sit in my closet and do all my voiceovers because the flannel does a nice job of dampening the sound. And that's really, like, if I tune into a video and it's like, sounds like they're down in a well or there's like static, like it just throws me off completely. So that's my biggest tip for like video. Like, you don't need these fancy DLS. I mean, they're great. Like, I would love to have a cinematic feel to my videos with the depth of field, but people, it's fine. They don't care. They just want content and good audio so they can easily follow. And, you know, I try to add in some humor in my videos because I don't want to be like totally straight laced, you know, square on these videos either. Yeah. You know, you want to make it entertaining. Because that's what they're tuning in for, like a show. That's what you hope, anyway.
And I think, for me, I think the more authentic it is, showing real shop life and having fun. And you and there's quite a few of my other friends out there, they know you can see in their video the passion they have for what they do. And that's just being authentic, and you're one of those genuine dudes, buddy.
Thanks.
Okay. I got a few questions here that I kind of typed out. Okay, so this one's kind of personal. All right, so I got to ask this one. I see you have a good mix of power tools and hand tools.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm going to throw this at. What's your favorite hand plane you got going there?
That would probably be my Rabbiting Block Plane by Lee Nielsen.
Really? Okay, so how does that Hillview one look? You like that one?
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah, no, I use it all the time. A lot of people are like, oh, I'd never be able to use that. It's too beautiful. But the weight on this thing, it is so heavy, when for hand planing, you really need a lot of mass behind there to get a nice clean. And this thing is just so beautifully built by Tony at Hillview Wood and Metal. I use it a lot. Yeah, yeah. It's dovetailed on the construction with the sides. And so I had sent him. I'd send him the walnut for this to put in here for the infill. And he made me, I think, a 4-inch double square where he used the same walnut on the infill on the body of it.
Sweet.
So, yeah, it's nice to have those boutique tools. They're very expensive. They're totally worth it based on the labor that he puts into these and the quality. Yeah. You know, this is an heirloom tool.
And but what's cool is you actually use them. You just don't let them sit there.
No, I mean, they collect dust, but I use them.
No, for sure, because I've always said this, and I'm going to bring it back to the company that we're here with, Festool, is everybody comes to my shop and sees all my hand planes, my measuring and marking stuff. And they go, oh, you use hand tools. And I always say, with Festool and the right mix of hand tools, it's a perfect match.
Sure.
You know, and I just wanted to say that because I see you use hand tools and your channel just, it appeals to me because you're using both.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Cool. All right. So let's talk about that cool Tana video. Everybody, I just want to let you know, we sent Keith a cool Tana. And when he did the video and you posted that, we were here and we were all laughing. That morning, okay. I came in and everybody goes, did you see Keith's cool Tana video? Is that great? So how many, you had your shot cat. Your shot cat's name is?
I have Jerry and Lola, too.
And Lola. I didn't know you had a second one because yeah. Jerry's the real character, huh?
Yeah, he's the one out here the most. Lola's a little more shy and reserved, but yeah, Jerry's always like, I was at the computer this morning at 8 o'clock and he's scratching at the garage door to come out here. So he's he has this little loft up in the rafters there. That's where he is sleeping right now.
I love it. Cause a lot of people have shop dogs. I have 3 shop dogs. Do have shop cats. You remember what they had at Rubio by the back door? They had the terrarium.
Oh,
the shop tarantula.
I'll pass on that.
Outside.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
No way.
No way. No thanks.
Hey, how many takes did it have for Jerry? Did it take for him to claw and jump out?
It was one and I was blown away. I call him one take Jerry.
Wow.
Cause you try to go into these videos with an idea. Like how it's going to go. So my idea was, I'm going to make it look like he broke into the cool tainer and was hiding in there. And like Lola would have tried to jump out immediately, but when you throw him in there, he just like is sniffing around to see what it is. So that was the perfect timing. And I opened it up. And when he started scratching at the side of the thing, I was in my head. I'm just cheering. I'm like, yes, it's exactly what I wanted. And then when he jumped out, it all worked out perfect. I wanted it, which doesn't normally happen, but in that case, so I'm glad you liked it.
We loved it. Everybody at corporate just loved it. We were all laughing.
Good. Good.
Cool. Hey, I know we talked a little about this, but in your design, where do you find inspiration for your design?
Well, I think I'm like a lot of people, Google Images, Pinterest, Houzz, all of it, because I am not a creative guy. If you said, Keith, we want you to build us a one-of-a-kind. Go ahead.
Time out.
Okay.
Are very good.
Well, thank you, but it takes a long time to get to that point. That's the problem. So if someone said, hey, build us a one-of-a-kind coffee table, that's the first thing I would do. I'd start flipping and searching to try to get some inspiration and design ideas, and then I end up like melding different things from other people's designs. So to come up with something original like is very difficult for me, which is why, unfortunately, furniture sometimes take me a while. Like this standing desk I'm working on, I'm going to do a little drawer pullout on the front, probably a dovetail drawer. And I'm, just trying to figure out with the size, where it should be, how I want it to hang. So all these things, like when you show a video on a YouTube video, it's all like, oh, he must have had that all laid out the whole time. It's step, 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 perfect. Well, they don't see all the behind the scenes, like trial and error. I mean, you can't put that all in a video. So there's a lot, I do a lot of prototyping. And that's kind of my thing. That way I can get an idea of proportions and scale. You can do it on the computer, on SketchUp, or whatever else you may use, but that doesn't necessarily give you exactly what you need. But when you do it in kind of real life or in real scale proportions, that's where you can really figure out what works, what doesn't, how it looks, how it doesn't.
Yeah, I do a lot of mock-ups with cardboard.
Yes, yes, you exactly. Know, it's the cheapest and fastest way to do it.
Hot glue gun, and I've done them with door skins, cut up door skins. I template areas with door skins, and I learned that in the marine trade. It was one of the best tips because I loft a lot of pieces. So, yeah, and then just recently I started using wire frame. For me, when I look at your stuff, your pieces, I go, he's got a hell of an eye for proportion. I was wondering how you got there. That's why I wanted to.
It's a lot of trial and error. You can go with the what's that famous scale? The proportion scale.
The golden.
The golden rule. Yeah.
Yeah, I always got to do this because I made a mistake giving a speech one time. And I always say it's the golden proportion, the golden rule.
No,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's by the way, it's based off of your body, your distance to here, from here to your belly. But it's really weird, but it works. And that's where the Renaissance man comes from. Leonardo da Vinci.
Da Vinci? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Golden rule. Okay. Yeah.
The golden rule. Golden proportion.
Portion. Yep. Yeah. That's a good, always a good place to start.
But here's what I will always tell people. When you build a mock-up and it looks right, it is part, your eye never lies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your eye never lies. And so if it's the right proportion, it's based off that golden proportion.
And I've really run into this. It is so, your eye just knows. And it's very, what I've run into before is because I build everything on my bench. So even if it's a coffee table or whatever, I'm building it on my bench. So, oh, this looks great. And the second you put it on the floor where it's actually going to go, it completely changes. You know, everybody thinks like when you tell them a chair is 18 inches high and they measure 18 inches, it's like, no way. That's way too low. Go measure your chair. It's 18 inches.
Yep.
So you got to really look at things in the place they're going to go to get a true sense of proportions.
Dining room tables, too. You have that in your shop. And someone says, I'll never get my legs under there when they look at the apron skirt. And I go, that's the right height. That's the right height of your apron.
Yeah.
Because your chair is 18 inches and you'll flow right under there.
Right.
You're absolutely right. It's completely different on a bench. And then you bring it down to the floor. Completely different.
Completely. Yeah.
Cool. Cool. All right. So what else am I going to ask you? Okay. Here's one. Who was the biggest influence of yours getting into the business? You kind of might have alluded to this, but maybe there's somebody out there that you really use as a mentor or really said, hey, I can do that if that person can do it. And I really, and you researched a lot of their work. Who's the biggest influence is what I'm getting at?
I mean, the biggest influence in woodworking was Norm Abram. For what he did to make things so approachable in building. As far as business goes, you know, honestly, Instagram has played a significant role in that. With all the people that I follow in the trades, whether they're furniture makers or builders, you know, guys like Nick Schiffer, NS Builders, John Hurahan, you know, their podcast where they talk a lot about business and the behind the scenes stuff.
Yep.
They really give you a lot to think about. And also like Spencer Lewis at Insider Carpentry. He's a one man finished carpenter who does a phenomenal job at documenting his processes and how he streamlines things. Carpenter One is another one. So all these people you can just pull from, like they're constantly giving out business advice and tips.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's up to you to grab what you think is pertinent and can apply to you. There's so much information and people are so willing to share that information that was never available 10 years ago without this platform.
No. And a trim carpenter would never tell you how to hand crown because they said, oh, you're just going to go and do it. And I'm going to lose business.
Right.
And then a really cool gentleman out there. And it was a lot more than 10 years ago. His name was Gary Katz.
Oh, yeah. I follow him, too.
And he, what a passion for the trade. And I loved his tagline, but this guy believed it. Honor your craft.
Mm-hmm.
And what he taught people was amazing on his roadshow. I just think the world of him. By the way, I'm just going to comment on Nick Schiffer and Tyler and Johnny. That was the first podcast I ever did.
No kidding.
You ready?
Yeah.
I didn't even know what a podcast was. And they kind of, I was on the set with Norm of This Old House, and they said, hey, tonight after you shoot with this, you're going to come upstairs. It was at Jeff Sweener's shop, and you're going to do a podcast. I go, okay, I guess so. And I had, you ready? I had never listened to a podcast. And the next thing I know, I said, hey, Johnny, what time is it? He goes, we've been at this for 3.5 hours.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So the first podcast I listened to, from them, I was on my way to South Carolina, and it was Norm Abram.
Wow.
And I'm going to tell you, he is the nicest gentleman you ever want to meet, hang out with. He's the most giving individual, and I watched the Yankee Workshop with my dad growing up.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, as I wish my dad was here to see this, you know, and because he just loved them. So I gushed too much. But really nice. And I didn't know you were from New Hampshire.
I was born in Boston in Quincy City Hospital. And then we lived down on the Cape until I was 10 and then moved to New Hampshire. My mother still lives there. I was just back in Massachusetts this weekend, but
you called New Hampshire home. I still consider Maine home, and I've been away for 38 years now.
Yeah, I mean that's where you grow up, where your roots are.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I'm a New England kid. I'm a New England kid.
For sure. That is so cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That is so cool. All right. What else do I get here? Okay, let's talk about this because I'm a podcast fanatic.
Okay.
Shop Sounds. I know the guys there. Yeah. Okay, I know the other guy. I don't know Nick Key, but I hear about him all the time from my friends. I heard he's a wonderful guy. How did you guys all meet, and how did you get Shop Sounds podcast going?
So there was actually another podcast before that. It was called The Craft Will Never Die, which was Nick and Jason and Blake Weber from the Weber Woodshop. And so that kind of started, and then I don't know how long it lasted, 10 or 15 episodes. And Blake, just whether it was a time commitment he couldn't, wasn't able to do, and that kind of dissolved. And then Jason and Nick reached out to me and asked if I wanted to join. Now, I had known Nick for many years through Instagram. We'd hung out at the very first Workbench Con. Jason, I had met there as well, and that's kind of how we all became friends. So they asked me, I was like, yeah, let's do it. And, you know, we've been going 40 episodes now, I think. We go every other week. You know, I toy in my head with going weekly. I'd like to do weekly. But on the other hand, you know, bi-weekly is okay. People aren't screaming for a weekly podcast, so we don't want them to get too sick of us. So we just give them small doses to keep them coming back. We have a great Patreon support group. Like, awesome. It's just mind-blowing how many people support us on Patreon and keep us going and keep us committed. So we have a lot of fun. We usually record Friday nights, and Nick edits it right after the podcast and it's out the next morning.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what he does outside of that, right? He works in the audio.
He's a video editor for a giant church in Kentucky.
Oh,
so his audio video background blows any of us away. So that's his game for his day job. He's phenomenal at it.
What I'm also blown away at is this is what's cool because I didn't know that. I know you're in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Jason Hobbs.
Close. It's a vowel.
Oh my God, what a character. He's in Portland, Oregon.
Yep.
And Nick is in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And you guys do get together every Friday and do this. And this is what I think is amazing because, like you said, this didn't exist many years ago. And the sharing aspect of it is incredible.
Right.
I just think it's going to, for me, project the craft further because the more people we can say, hey, this is a great thing to do, you know, build furniture, remodel, build houses. We got to get more people into it because I know I'm passionate. I know you are. And I know all the people I'm associated are with it, too, are just so passionate about woodworking.
Right. It's, you know, gets back to the keep craft alive kind of hashtag where, you know, kids today, unfortunately, you know, they're being led away from the trades. Like, you don't want to go into, you know, where you can make six figures pretty simple by being a plumber and electrician. And you don't, you know, you just go to school for that. But, you know, I was the same way growing up. It was like, you go to college. That's it. You graduate high school, you go to college. There was no, now I had toyed with going to a trade school to kind of learn building construction. And I was just like, you know, I think I just got to go to regular college. I'm glad I did, but who knows how it would have turned out if I'd gone the other way. I just don't know.
Oh, no. Because my background, I finally found what I was a woodworker my entire life, but I veered away from it until my late 20s.
Okay.
Mid 20s. And then I got heavy into it, cabinet shop owner, bam, 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 whatever in Florida. And I never realized that I knew what I knew And I don't look at it as a waste of time, because what I did before that really built my business acumen to get into the cabinet industry. Mm. So I think sometimes going to school gets you that way of thinking. But like my dad always said, it's the school of hard knocks coming out of college, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of going through that whole thing of growing up on your own. It's a I try to teach people, if you are passionate about something, follow your passion. All else will follow. Mm. And that's kind of what's happened to me. Never in my wildest dreams did I think I'd be a trainer here at Fest School and getting right. And getting paid a track saw every 6 months. You know,
you're overpaid.
And you know what? My buddy, who used to be the CEO, would tell my wife, we could pay him in power tools, and he'd be, okay with that.
He'd be fine with that.
And guess what? She said, he's right.
He's right. Yeah. I'd be all right with that.
How the heck did you find about working with Festool? Because I know you've got quite a bit.
You know, I was thinking of that, so 15 years ago, because I looked at my saw, it's a 2006, was my first purchase, my track saw. And I was working for my uncle at the time, and I can't remember if I saw Tom Silva use it or if I just saw it as in an ad in a magazine. He must have used it on TV. Oh, and yeah. I bought it, and it was $400 then for the track and the saw. And my uncle, who's like an old school, he was a union carpenter, you know, more down and dirty. You know, if you were to build a shower, he'd use a copper pan and Duroc. Like he wouldn't be using the Schluter system and all these things. So when I got that, he was annoyed, kind of like, you know, what do you need these newfangled tools? But the first time we had to scribe a cabinet and a base, an end cabinet for a run of cabinets, and we had to scribe it to the floor, and I just, just throw the track on there and cut it. He's like, all right, fair play.
He got it.
And then probably 4 months later, I got the 1400 router. And so, yeah, that was 15 years ago. And then ever since, you just kind of, you know, you get the sanders and the tool collection kind of grows as you figure out what you need. And, you know, the Capex comes along. Yeah. But that's why that track saw has saved my bacon more times than I could count. And a specific instance, I was building veneer plywood cabinet, and then I always edge band with 3/4 inch solid material, but it usually has a chamfer on it. So I cut my pieces, what I thought they were the right size, but one side was just a hair too long, Uh-huh. So I put that track diagonally across my case and set that plunge depth and took just a hair off of that miter with the track saw, and it was perfect. Yeah. Like what else tool? I mean, you can maybe get a hand plane in there, but you're risking tear out on end grain and everything else. So yeah, that thing has paid for itself tenfold over the years.
Yeah. Still somebody asked me that question not too long ago, and I said, mine will always be the track saw. It made me the most money because it saved me the most time. And sure. I had two big unisaws in my shop. Everybody yelled at me why I was buying it. But what I was doing for 2.5 days, I rebuilt the whole thing in 2 hours. Wow. I was sold. And everybody in my community, there was like 5 cabinet shops in the area, they were all laughing that I spent that money. It was $400 with the track. I remember those days. It was unbelievable. And what was cool about it was they started borrowing my saw after they saw it. I couldn't find my saw for a couple of weeks once. I go, Mikey, who took the saw? And he goes, Sergio has it over at Malva. They all borrowed the saw. They could not believe the splinter-free cut, even on melamine.
Right.
I'm still sold to this day. It's still my favorite tool.
Well, especially for me in this small shop, because to break down a piece of plywood, I can't. I need that track, so I throw it on my bench, and I could cut it down into smaller pieces. And then I can run it through on my table saw, or, you know, because I got rid of my MFT probably 5 or 6 years ago. And I remember on your podcast, Ben had been saying, because some people complain that it's shaky. And that's exactly why I got rid of it. Because, when you're just making a cut or sanding on it, if it's shaky, it doesn't matter. But when you're trying to hand plane and your surface is moving with you like a wave, like, it just didn't work for me. And the storage underneath, you could put a shelf, but it just didn't maximize storage. So I got a whole new tool cabinet. I built my own kind of thick MFT torsion box on top of that that now I can use my track with. It's just more useful for me. But yeah, without that track saw, I wouldn't be able to break down full sheets of plywood in here.
Yeah, that's why I'll always have my massive, I have a Veritas bench, and I'm going to be adding to it soon, but I need that mass for my hand planing.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Absolutely. I just need it. Even my drawer system is built as a dead man. I just pull out a drawer when I put a bigger board. It just works perfect. But I have, in my shop at home, I have two MFTs. I can't work without them. I just, there's something about an MFT. And I kind of, somebody taught me this from the local woodcraft. They go, Sedge, you just don't have two rows of dog holes. You have all the dog holes across the table in the grid. You can clamp it in any spot.
Sure.
All right. So, boy, you just asked a lot of questions all at once. Here's what, I'll throw this one at you. I know you get a lot of Festool. What's your favorite Festool accessory?
Accessory?
Yeah, huh?
Oh, so not tool, accessory?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, what? I mean, okay, I have aftermarket accessories that I like for my Festools.
Let's move on from that. What's your favorite Festool tool?
Okay, so we talked about the track saw. So, like, you know, if you're asked what's your favorite child, which I don't have, or your favorite cat in my case, I couldn't answer that. Like, the track saw is, because I've had it for so long, that's just ingrained. But like everybody else, the domino. Like, once I find, I used to borrow people's domino. I was like, I really can't drop the cash on this. And then once I got it, I was like, you idiot, you should have bought this years ago, because it pays for itself in one or two projects, and you can't beat the versatility. I have the smaller one, the 500, and people ask me a lot, what should I get, the 700 or the 500? I said, it all depends on the size of furniture you're building. For me, I would say maybe twice I've used the XL, and I've borrowed it from a friend. But the 500 is all I've ever needed, and I just love that tool. And I don't know what I would do without it now. You know, I have a really great doweling jig, which you can use as well. If you don't have one, there are definitely a lot of great alternatives. But when you have it, man, it's just awesome.
That's so cool.
I will gush over that thing all day long.
Yeah, I have a 500 at home myself, Keith. And I just picked up a 700 because I needed the longer tenon, tenon.
Yeah.
I needed more long grain in the build I'm getting ready to do.
Right.
So I was just thinking of that. And by the way, that's probably the number one question we get. Should I get a 500 or a 700? And you answered it absolutely, in my eye, perfectly. What are you building the majority of the time? You know, and a lot of people, I will always push them into a 500. I get Big D over here going, yep. That's why I got a 500, Sedge.
Well, and that 700 is heavy. Like, it's hard to kind of maneuver around, where the 500 is very maneuverable. You can just work with it a lot easier. So if you're only building smaller to mid-sized furniture, it's really, you know, and I use it on tabletops for alignment purposes, because if I'm building an 8-foot table, I don't want to have to worry about trying to get the middle, like those middle boards flush. Use the domino. It's you know, it's not there for strength. That long edge glue joint on a tabletop is all you need. It's just there for alignment to help me when I'm clamping, so that the stress level is already up here with clamping. So I'd rather have it be, you know, not go any higher.
That's the hardest thing to get through to somebody. For me, being a woodworker my entire life, you just nailed it. It's the long grain to long grain adhesion.
There's nothing stronger.
And when we built, I'm going to do a quick story. This will be very quick. I was really blessed to have Norm Abram, Tom Silva, Nathan Rose, and Jim Maine. We built the conference tables here at Festool. Okay. And Norm and I were given the task. We ripped four slabs so we could put them together. And somebody looked at us and go, aren't you going to use the domino to join them? And I looked at Norm, and he goes, what would you do? And I go, let's just throw glue on it. And it's long grain to long grain. And he looked at me and goes, yeah, that's what I would do too. Because they were milled perfectly flat.
Yeah.
And we knew, because the way we ripped them with the 75 for that perfect glue line, we knew they were going to go together. So when people come in here, they go, how many dominoes are on these 12-foot tables?
Yeah.
I go, none. And they go, wow, this is perfect.
Right.
That's the thing to get it through. Now, if they were warped, then the alignment comes in.
Yeah.
And you nailed it perfectly. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so what do you see for your future growth? Where do you see this business going?
I mean, I really want, I mean, I'd love to be like, you know, when Jason was on here, Bourbon Moth talked about it, like, you just want to build what you want to build and create content around it. But, you know, that way you don't have to, I mean, dealing with clients is generally good, but it's also a pain in the rump a lot of times. So when you're working and you're building whatever you want, you're still not working for just yourself because you have sponsors to answer to, where you create a video and you have to send it to them for approval on their ad placement. So you're still working for somebody. And believe me, they can be just as picky as a customer can be on a commission piece. But it becomes a little easier because then you can, okay, I need this for the house, or I need that, or I want to build this shop project. So you're not constrained by commission work coming in. But to be honest, I'm not sure I would function well in that, because there's only so many things you can build for the house or for people you know. You know, sometimes you need those commissions to keep the creativity flowing. Like a guy reached out to me, they just built a house in the Catskills, and they're like, you know, we have some furniture we love to build and we'd love for you to build it. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, a bunch of pieces for a new, that would, I mean, it hasn't materialized yet, but like, those are the kinds of things that are really cool to build a bunch of pieces together that all kind of flow. So, you know, in price point, if the price is right, it's great. If it's not, it becomes more of a slog, you know, it becomes difficult and less, it becomes harder to come out in the shop when you know you're not going to be making what you should be making on that project. Yeah. Now, you hope you can make some of that up on the back end with YouTube, but that's not a guarantee. It's not a guarantee at all with AdSense or anything else.
Yeah, building that clientele, I think, is paramount.
Right.
You know? And even if that customer is tough sometimes to get along with, but they're willing to pay and they're willing to keep giving you commissioned work. My buddy put two of his daughters through commission.
Yeah.
Through commissioned work through college.
That's amazing.
Because this lady just loved his work, but she was quite picky, but he goes, I could put up with it, you know? So, okay. And right now, I might know the answer to this because I think you might have said it already. What are your biggest struggles right now in your business, but also your shop?
Distractions. Like, I get distracted with this phone right here.
Yeah.
So I'll complete a task and I'll be like, oh, nice job. Let me check out Instagram. 45 minutes later, you know, nothing has gotten done. So I get with, you know, checking your YouTube analytics, checking TikTok, checking your emails. I get very distracted.
Oh, wow.
And a lot of it has to do with working at home. I'm very thankful that my commute is from my kitchen through my door into my shop. I do love that. But it's also like, oh, I need to go to the bathroom real quick. You run in. Oh, let me grab a soda. Oh, hey, what are the cats doing? Oh, let me check my email on my computer. And it's very easily to get derailed and totally off track and lose, you know, my seventh grade English teacher. So stay on task. Like, I really have a difficulty staying on task. But this past weekend, I was at my buddy Derek from Malden's shop, and we were working on these bending forms back here.
I was watching.
He's in a basement shop, no windows. You got to climb like two stories out of there to get to the bathroom. So it's like, once you're in there, you're in the bunker and you just don't leave. So there's nothing to do but be on task and get stuff done. And I don't know why I get so distracted, because I know when I don't, I can get a lot done.
Yeah.
But I hit kind of design roadblocks a lot. Because I know kind of so many different ways to do things, you're like, should I do it this way or that way, or this way or that way? I could do it, you know, and then you start going down every road and what the pitfalls are, the pros, the cons. And 2 hours later, you're nowhere. Whereas if you just done it, you would have been done and on to the next task. You know, when Jason and Nick and I built that shuffleboard table, we were trying to decide where the lower stretcher went. And we were sitting there, we set it up, we're hemming and hawing. And I'm like, I don't know. And, you know, Jason's like, you're so difficult to work with. Just make a decision. And, you know, as funny as it was sad at the same time, because he's right. I have a hard time making decisions like that because it looks good both ways. So what's the best way? I'll ask my wife, what do you think of this? Or I'll ask some people on Instagram, hey, what do you think? And it just, because you want it to be perfect, you know?
That clouds me even more because everybody's got an opinion and they're all good. So when you make that decision? I can be the same way. I can be the same way. Sometimes I'm building something at home and I just get so cluttered. So I'll drive up here on the weekends, do some stuff around here, and I'll work it out up here, you know?
Okay.
It makes sense to me. Okay. I keep saying one more question, but I have this here.
That's all right.
I kind of know a little bit about this backstory, but I laughed so hard when you were collabing with Jason on Neil Patrick Harris's build. Mm-hmm. That was so cool. And I watched the video where you borrowed the classifieds on Instagram the other day.
Yeah.
How did that come up? Do you guys say, hey, let's do this? Or was that – it was just funny, you know?
So how did the intro come about where I kind of came up with that? So that's – you know, Jason is very good at inspiring you to come up with a better idea. He's so dang witty and creative and just constantly has ideas flowing through his head. And so you're trying to one up him. You're trying to come up with something funny. And so he had his own skit worked out for that. So I kind of had an idea. Like I would have Neil, he'd just be sitting in a park bench. I'd walk up and, you know, trying to integrate like the acting thing with him and talk to him like I'm an actor. And it just happened to work. It took a few takes and a couple changes to the script, if you will. But it ended because he was so, because he's an actor, you know, it just, it worked really well. But it's difficult to come up with those little skits. Like you want that, as soon as someone starts watching your video, you want to pull them in right away.
Yeah.
And it's tough. It's tough on every video to come up with a little skit or a little stinger to reel them in to keep watching.
He seems like a wicked genuine guy.
We have so much fun working together. And Jason's like he keeps me on task.
Yeah.
Like he's always like, we're sitting there on the couch the night before. He's like, this is what we have to get done tomorrow. This is what we're going to do. And we just go. And when we were working on that bench, it was so great because, all right, you do this, I'll do that. And we could just work and then come back together and assemble. And, you know, he was here for 10 days. If you said someone else was going to come here and, you know, my wife, like, who's staying here for 10 days? But, you know, we just get along so well. It just worked out perfectly. It was a great experience. And then with the shuffle table where Nick, shuffleboard table where Nick was there too, it was great. These collaborations are fun. Very fun. Yeah. It gives you an insight into other people's skills, how they work, pick up different techniques. It's a very valuable experience.
And I just love it that you guys share it all for everybody.
Right.
And that matters right now because there's so many, I'm going to say it, kids out there trying to decide, hey, should I go to a Volk school? Should I go to a trade school? Should I go to a 4-year college program?
Right.
I don't know. And just when people see people are passionate on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, whatever, they go, hey, man, I think I'm going to get into it.
Right. Yeah.
I think it just works. It works. All right. I have, and I'm looking right now. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is so cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
this is
you
awesome.
So much for your time. Big D keeps looking up at the clock.
And boy, am I intruding into your lunchtime?
No. We kind of feel like we're intruding on you because you're so daggone busy.
No, we're good. Like I said, I get distracted easily. This is just another distraction.
Oh, my God.
I'm good.
So, hey, I'm going to tell you right now, and I've been saying this a lot with the people we've interviewed so far. This is not your first time on here. We're going to keep going with this. Everybody loves this.
That's great.
So I'm just going to do a little thing for everybody. So everybody knows, yes, this is on Instagram Live right now, but it's going to live in about a week on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and about 400 other platforms. So I always say this, hey, if you're going to listen on Apple and you're going to listen on Spotify, please give us a review. Mm-hmm. Okay, rate us. It makes a big difference. We really appreciate it. And also, if you could, go to Shop Sounds Podcast and give that a listen.
Yeah.
These are three great guys out there sharing their craft with you. And make sure you review that and give them a 5-star.
Of course.
5-star, I know that.
We'll hunt you down. Awesome.
Thank you,
Sedge.
So much, my friend.
Thank you, Big D, for setting it up.
Big D, he's in the house, and we're going to hang at Workbench Con.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm counting the days.
You know it. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, for listening. We love you. We'll see you soon.
All right. Have a great day, Sage.
Thanks, Keith.
See ya.